Radio Catskill.
Live from the Radio Catskill studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, in a major win for nature lovers and conservationists alike, the Open Space Institute has secured one of the largest remaining private forest lands in the Catskills, over 3,100 acres of ecologically vital terrain. The acquisition not only helps protect clean drinking water for more than 15 million residents across the region, but also preserves critical wildlife. Radio Catskill's Miguel Santiago Colon has a report. We're debuting a new podcast here at Radio Catskill dedicated to local theater. It's Curtain Call, and host producer Tom Ken Della will join us to tell us more. Plus, hitting the track for a night of roller derby, and a forgotten composer shines again in a weekend of chamber music concert revival. Lasco Kid is here. First, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. The Trump administration is suing Maine over that state's refusal to ban transgender athletes from women's and girls' sports. President Trump signed an executive order for this. Maine Democratic Governor Janet Mills did not comply, saying her duty is to follow state law. A federal judge is ordering the Trump administration to come up with more information about what it's done to bring back a migrant deported by mistake to El Salvador. The case of Kilma Abrego Garcia has gone to the U.S. Supreme Court. The justices ordered the Trump administration to facilitate his return. And Piers Jimenez-Bustillo says the lower federal court judge has been holding daily court hearings to check in on this.
During Tuesday's hearing, Judge Zinis said that she had received, quote, information of little value on what had been done to fulfill any of this. So she granted a request from Abrego Garcia's lawyers for the government team to undergo a process called expedited discovery. This means that government officials from Homeland Security, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and state will be deposed under oath.
And Piers Jimenez-Bustillo reporting. Japan will seek to roll back U.S. tariffs today in talks with U.S. officials in Washington. NPR's Anthony Kuhn reports Japan is one of the first countries to enter into such negotiations, and other governments will be watching its progress.
Leading Japan's delegation is Ryosei Akazawa. He's a close ally of Prime Minister Shigeru Ishiba. As he left Tokyo, Akazawa said he wanted to build trust with the U.S. and achieve a win-win outcome. Ishiba has said he won't be rushed into making any deal, but he's also not considering retaliating with tariffs of his own. President Trump, who will join his Commerce and Treasury secretaries for talks with Akazawa, has a list of grievances against Japan. He accuses the U.S. ally of using non-tariff barriers to block U.S. exports of automobiles and farm products, keeping Japan's currency undervalued, and contributing too little to the cost of stationing U.S. troops in Japan. Anthony Kuhn, NPR News, Seoul.
Stocks opened lower this morning as the Commerce Department reported a bigger-than-expected jump in retail sales last month. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell more than 300 points in early trading.
Retail sales jumped by 1.4% in March, a sign that shoppers continued to spend money even as confidence in the U.S. economy fell. The rise was largely fueled by a big jump in auto sales as car buyers raced to make deals before Trump administration tariffs took effect in early April. Spending at restaurants also jumped in March, but spending at grocery stores failed to keep pace with rising grocery prices. Car makers were also hustling to get ahead of tariffs last month. Auto manufacturing activity rose 1.2%. Overall, industrial production was down, however, as warmer-than-usual weather depressed demand for heat from utilities. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
You're listening to NPR. Authorities in Dallas say four male students were injured at a high school after a shooting yesterday. Three sustained gunshot wounds that are not life-threatening. Dallas police say a suspect is in custody. The civil rights group, the NAACP, is suing the U.S. Department of Education. It's challenging the agency's threats to end federal funding for schools that do not get rid of DEI programs. The group says this effort blocks legal work to provide equal opportunities to black students. It also claims the federal agency's guidance both misinterprets federal law and contains factual inaccuracies. This year's unofficial competition to become the Song of the Summer is already underway. NPR's Stephen Thompson has this report.
The Billboard charts are usually dominated by major stars. Last year, just 14 artists landed a career-first top 10 single. This year, only three artists have hit the top 10 for the first time, and two of them did the trick just this week. Alex Warren's song Ordinary zips from number 14 to number 7. The rapper Big X The Plug also hit the top 10 for the first time this week, with All The Way debuting at number 4. It's a hip-hop country hybrid that features the singer Bailey Zimmerman. If you're looking to score the song of the summer, cracking the top 10 in April is a great place to start. Stephen Thompson, NPR News.
And I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, supporting creative people and effective institutions committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information is at macfound.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. Good news for outdoor enthusiasts and conservation advocates. The Open Space Institute has permanently protected more than 31 acres of forest land in the Catskills, one of the largest privately owned tracts left in the region. This significant acquisition, completed in late February, will help safeguard drinking water for over 15 million people across New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania, while also preserving critical wildlife habitat and opening up new opportunities for recreation. Radio Catskills' Miguel Santiago Colon spoke with Tom Gravel, Northeast Senior Land Project Manager at the Open Space Institute, about the importance of this project and the broader mission behind it.
We're a land conservation organization that works up and down the East Coast, and we protect land that provides opportunities for public recreation, land that safeguards clean drinking water and clean air, land that provides natural defenses to extreme weather and climate change, like mitigating flooding and protecting forests that help to capture carbon. And we also prioritize land conservation that provides really valuable habitat for plants and animals. We were founded in 1974 right here in New York, and we still focus a great deal of our work in the Hudson Highlands, in the Shawangunks, the Capital Region, the Adirondacks, and of course in the Catskills. And so, yeah, thanks for having me on to talk about this more recent land conservation project that we completed right in Sullivan County in the town of Neversink. It's a very large project, kind of one of the few really large remaining privately owned parcels, or was privately owned parcels remaining in the Catskill Park, at just over 3,100 acres. The property contains a forested ridgeline of about 7 mountain peaks, roughly 2,400 to 2,700 feet in elevation. And one of the big benefits of protecting a property of this scale is that it really helps to protect clean drinking water for local communities, and also for the millions of people in the New York City metropolitan area. The property is entirely within the Delaware River watershed, but also within the watershed of New York City's Neversink Reservoir. And so, yeah, one of the big benefits is that water quality component, the fact that the streams on the property and the wetlands eventually flow into the Neversink River to the south. And then that ridgeline that I mentioned kind of separates the property. The streams on the northern side of the property flow into the Fir Brook and Willowemaw Creek. And the Willowemaw, along with the Beaverkill, is one of New York's premier trout fishing streams. Another one of the benefits too of this property, not to keep going on and on, but I think it will eventually allow for a variety of recreational uses that are currently allowed in the adjacent Catskill Forest Preserve.
Yeah, and what does that mean for wildlife? You mentioned a few of the benefits for citizens. How does wildlife benefit from this project?
Sure. Well, because we are protecting this this large intact forest, again, 3,100 acres. There are no public roads that are going through it. And so that really allows for wildlife to travel through this forested corridor. And then the wildlife that are there, there are these kind of riparian areas or areas along stream banks and wetlands that provide habitat for amphibians like turtles and frogs. But then there are forest interior songbirds such as wood thrush and hermit thrush that find the suitable habitat. Then there's also kind of the larger mammals like black bears, fishers, and bobcats that find the suitable habitat, especially when connected to larger areas like the Catskill Forest Preserve, allows them to have that kind of ability to migrate.
And what's the next step after it? Like, what's, now that you completed this, like what would be the next step for it?
So we just completed the acquisition back in late February. So we have a stewardship team here at OSI that is working on putting together kind of a management plan for the property. But ultimately, OSI won't be the long-term steward and owner of the property. We are intending to sell the property to New York State as an addition to the Catskill Forest Preserve, and specifically the Willowemoc Wild Forest unit of the Forest Preserve. And so, yeah, once the property is transferred to the state will also kind of engage in a sort of a planning process. But it will likely be that the property will be open to the public for various recreational uses such as hiking and biking, fishing and hunting. Those are uses that are allowed right now on the Willowemoc Wild Forest. In addition to other uses like snowmobiling, there's 29 miles of snowmobile trails on the Willowemoc Wild Forest. So there's potential that could be expanded to this property as well. And just for passive uses too, like wildlife viewing and just being out in nature.
Will those recreational activities, you know, be available to do as soon as, you know, it's finished, or will it take some time, you know, for the land to be adjusted for people to like hike or do all these activities?
So yeah, right now we are kind of going through our planning process. And we're trying to figure out if we'll be able to provide some form of public access. But once it is transferred to the state, there will definitely be public access allowed. And there will be the state goes through its what they call an update of its unit management plan. So an update of the plan for the Willowemoc Wild Forest. And as part of that update, there will be public input solicited as to what the local communities and visitors would like to see there. So we're anticipating hopefully selling the property to the state in maybe the next 2 or 3 years. And once it is transferred to the state, that's when I think the public will really get a chance to get out and use the property.
In the official communication you guys sent out, you mentioned a few safeguards. What do they bring? Which safeguards does this project bring itself?
So once the property is transferred to New York State, any property that the state owns within the blue line of the Catskill Park is termed as forever wild. So it becomes part of the Catskill Forest Preserve. So that means basically you're there to experience wilderness, and there are protections against any kind of conversion of the land to any other use. There's no tree cutting. You're really there to kind of experience nature as wilderness. And so there is, like I've mentioned, there's public recreation that's provided or that's permitted. But it's usually sort of in these kind of passive types of recreation. There's not going to be any athletic fields, those kinds of things. It's, you're there because of that kind of wilderness feel to the property.
And on the long run, you know, like, because I'd be pretty enthused to know that there'd be more hiking trails or just like more places to, you know, do recreational activities. But to the state on the long run, what does this mean? What other benefits in the long term does this bring?
Sure. Well, let's see. A couple of years back, Governor Hochul signed legislation that establishes a conservation goal in New York State of protecting 30% of the state's lands and inland waters by 2030. And so right now it's looking like the state already is at about 22% of land that's considered conserved. But that still means that about another 2.8 or so million acres are needed to be protected in order to achieve that goal. Being able to acquire land of this scale is helping to kind of achieve that goal and the benefits that go with it in terms of mitigating extreme weather and climate change. And because land conservation is a tool along with other options like renewable energy. Land conservation and the benefits of protecting large intact forests help to suck carbon out of the air the water, the clean drinking water benefits and the flood mitigation benefits of protecting large intact forests like these are really felt by local communities.
Off the air, what we're talking about, you know, like, this is just one of the projects that you guys are working on. What else do you have in store for the future? What is Open Space Institute working on?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we've had a long history in the Catskills. We've protected over 25,000 acres. And a lot of that work has been done kind of in the Western Catskill Park and the Beaverkill Valley, but then also around the Shokan Reservoir, and then also trying to make that connection between the Catskills and the Shawangunks, which is another kind of legacy area. So, we've been doing a fair amount of work, kind of helping try to make that connection between the Catskills and the Shawangunks. And then we are kind of active, not just in the Catskills, but working on kind of creating these corridors so that both human and wildlife corridors. So providing opportunities for people to get out on rail trails, which is or our Growing Greenways program, which we have established kind of in Ulster County, but also in Orange County. But these corridors also act as corridors for wildlife, and so we're kind of active, not just Catskills, Hudson Valley, but kind of all over Capital Region, Adirondacks, and. One of the main themes, as I've said, is helping to protect these intact corridors, both for human and for wildlife movement.
Having open spaces, wildlife spaces like these, I'm pretty sure it comes to like a great number of benefits just to Earth in general. Could you go by some of them? Just how spaces like these and keeping them intact, what does it mean for us?
Yeah, just on a personal level, I've got two daughters, 15 and 12, and I find that whenever there's a chance to kind of get them outside, get them off the screens, and just have some unstructured time just outside or in nature, whether it be just on a path, if we've have a chance to go camping or hiking, those are some very enjoyable times, but also just some times to just kind of decompress a little bit and get away. And so, one of our goals as an organization is to provide more of those outdoor opportunities for the communities and the places that we work. From a human perspective, providing those places to hunt, to fish, to hike, to bike. Those are one of the overriding goals. But then also another very important goal that has a component, especially to this project, is water quality and protecting clean sources of drinking water. And this property, because of where it's located, because of the forested attributes, basically helps to naturally filter water and provide clean drinking water to the communities in Neversink and the surrounding areas, then also for folks in New York City, and then further downstream of the Delaware River.
Tom, before we finish, is there anything else you might want our audience to know about?
Well, I guess I'd just say that it's budget season here in New York. Over the past several years, there's been a lot of there's been some strong support in terms of funding for land conservation, both through the Environmental Protection Fund, but then also through the Environmental Bond Act that was passed a couple of years ago. And so, I would just encourage your listeners. The budget cycle is now moving ahead. The governor has proposed a $400 million line item for the Environmental Protection Fund, and the Senate and Assembly have each proposed $500 million. So, and when you think about the fact that the overall state budget is around $250 billion, that $500 million, it doesn't just go to land protection. It goes to a whole host of environmental programs that that really there's a strong bang for that buck. So I would just advocate for folks to call their assemblymen, their state senators, and advocate for that strong EPF.
Tom, thank you so much for being here with us in Radio Catskill.
Thanks so much for having me, Jay Miguel.
Liberty, I'm Miguel Santiago Colon for Radio Catskill.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, getting on those roller skates for the Mid-Hudson Misfits Roller Derby. That's next on Radio Catskill.
I'm Mimi Bradley, Radio Catskills Development Manager, reminding you that a great way to keep public radio here in the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania is by becoming a Sound Supporter. Sound Supporters give small amounts, $20, $30, $50 a month or more, that add up to a big help. Plus, Sound Supporters get special thank yous, like drawings for tickets to events in our community throughout the year. Become a Sound Supporter. Go to wjffradio.org.
Support comes from Sullivan 180, building healthy communities through people, places, and policy one degree at a time. More information at sullivan180.org. From The River Reporter, the community newspaper covering four counties in Pennsylvania and New York along the Upper Delaware River. RiverReporter.com. And from listeners like you, who donate at wjffradio.org.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, spring is here, and it's officially time to dust off those roller skates. This past weekend, the Mid-Hudson Misfits rolled into action with a charity roller derby event benefiting the Hudson Valley LGBTQ Plus Center in Kingston. Mid-Hudson Misfits provides an open and inclusive space for women in the Mid-Hudson region who want to learn and play flat track roller derby. Radio Catskill's Kimberly Izar has this report from Skate Time in Akron on Sunday, where skaters and fans gathered for a fun night of blocking, slamming, and jamming on the rink.
We have Hell No Pity!
Two teams gather on the side of the oval-shaped roller rink. That's the countdown just before the scrimmage at Skate Time begins. Welcome to Roller Derby with the Mid-Hudson Misfits Roller Derby team. Roller Derby is a full contact sport, so expect skaters to use their whole bodies to score points. So how does it work exactly?
This form of derby looks a lot like a demolition derby with cars. There's two sets of five players on the track at one time. One of those players is the jammer. They'll have the star on the helmet. The jammer is the person who can score points, and they score points by getting through the pack of blockers, who are the other players, first, and then lapping that pack. And whichever jammer gets through first is the lead jammer, and the benefit of being the lead jammer is you can call off the jam at any point. So my strategy usually is once if your lead jammer and the other jammer gets out of the pack and is about to score their own points, you call it off before they can.
That's Patine Riot explaining how the game works. Yes, that's their roller derby name, a nickname skaters choose to reflect their personality. Roller derby is one of those games you really have to see in person. It's been around since the 1930s. It started in Chicago by Leo Seltzer, and since then, it's grown into a beloved pastime and sport by communities traditionally marginalized from mainstream sports, specifically queer people, women, and Black and Latino communities. In the 1950s and 60s, roller skating rinks were still segregated. Black Americans could only use the rink one night a week. During the Civil Rights Movement, skaters staged sit-ins at rinks to demand desegregation. Fast forward to the early 2000s, roller derby made a comeback and increasingly became a popular sport that defied traditional gender and racial norms. At the Mid-Hudson Misfits scrimmage, you could find skaters embracing their whole selves and quite literally using their bodies to ram into each other. Tonight is a special night. It's their spring scrimmage, and the teams are raising funds for the Hudson Valley LGBTQ+ Center in Kingston, which provides services and programming for the LGBTQ+ community in the region. Before the first whistle, there's a lot of prep and people that help to get the court roller derby ready. Skaters like Christine Northrop, aka Bomber, are putting on their protective gear. Knee pads, shin guards, helmets, you name it.
Okay, so I see you putting on your skates right now, yeah? How long does it typically take for you to get ready?
I'm usually pretty quick because I can't wait to get out on the floor and roll around. So I usually try to hightail it to get ready and get warmed up and ready to go for the games.
Bomber is a roller derby gold medalist. She's been skating for 15 years around the world. But a lot of tonight's skaters are competing for the first time. Jay Menace is one new skater who said it's been fun seeing her skills transform with time.
And, you know, just challenging my body at my age to, you know, do these things without fear and safely, you know. And I love it. I love seeing the transformation from being, like, really not so great to, you know, being okay. And being inspired to be better. So, yeah.
Why do you think that a community like this is so important, like, right now?
Well, our team, and I think most teams, are really inclusive and really supportive. And while it's a sport and it's definitely a competition, we support each other, whether we're on the same team or not. It's important to have community where you feel like you can just be your authentic self and do your best and have people around you that recognize that and take you for who you are. And it's just a great supportive environment, and you get to work out without fear of judgment. And it's, I think that's important right now, and especially for, you know, people who maybe don't feel accepted everywhere else. It's great to come somewhere where you see that it's just everybody having a good time.
Fennec Fox is another new skater who is drawn to derby for the inclusive community.
So I identify as trans masculine, right? I've never felt weird about it, you know, because I'm comfortable being around women and feminine people, but it's weird being around cisgender women in, like, sports. You know, it's a controversial topic right now, but I really feel at home in derby, and it's really great to both be active and, like, have these people as a community to me.
With the Mid-Hudson Misfits, roller derby is for everyone, and they're training the next generation of skaters. They have a juniors team called the Mid-Hudson Mischiefs for all genders ages 9 to 17. At the scrimmage, junior skater Layla Lugosi shares how she came up with her derby name and what's next for her.
So Bela Lugosi played Dracula in the first Dracula movie. So I replaced Bella with Lella, which is
fine. I love that. Okay, so how long have you been roller derbying?
A year and a half.
Can you tell me what you love most about it?
I love ramming into jammers and knocking them off the track.
Yeah, that's one of the best parts. And have you been able to make a lot of friends?
Yeah.
Do you think you're going to be doing this for a long time?
Definitely.
For those who may just be a little bit curious about the sport, bout coordinator Anita Amanda Huggenkiss said the Misfits is an all-gender roller derby team, and they are always recruiting for skating and non-skating officials, players, and volunteers.
So when people come out and they're like, I need to find community, I need to find like people, I'm like, you need to come to roller derby, because it is the most open and diverse group of humans you can find in one room that are open and accepting of one another. So, you know, as an ally, I'm here to amplify and support that.
In Accord, I'm Kimberly Iser for Radio Catskill.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, grab your playbill. We're debuting a new local podcast devoted to theater. We'll learn more about it next. This is Radio Catskill.
Hey there, it's Jason Dole. I just want to thank the hundreds of listeners who donated during Radio Catskill's spring fun drive. Your support keeps local news, culture, and conversations alive and well throughout our community. And if you didn't donate, you still can, anytime at wjffradio.org. Remember, whatever happens next, we will be here for you as long as you are here for us. Do your part and donate at wjffradio.org. Thank you.
Welcome back to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, if you've ever been swept away by the magic of a musical, or moved by a monologue, or caught yourself humming Defying Gravity for the 100th time, this next story is for you. We're debuting a new podcast. Tom Candela is the voice behind Curtain Call, a new local podcast that celebrates the artists, directors, and storytellers shaping both our hometown theater scene and the big Broadway stage. Each week, he'll bring listeners into the heart of the theater world, blending insightful interviews with some show-stopping Broadway tunes. And Tom Candela joins us now. Good morning.
Well, thank you, Tim, for that wonderful introduction. That was perfect. Yes, Curtain Call is a new passion of mine, and I want to thank again Radio Catskill for giving me the opportunity to present it to our listeners. So basically, I spotlight the magic of theater one conversation at a time. So the idea is to sit down with local producers, directors, writers, playwrights, actors, and sit down and have a really thorough conversation about what makes their show tick, what makes their creativity bloom. And so we have these great conversations, and we sit down and we just chat, you know, sort of like Catskill, you know, you're sitting down and talking a really in-depth conversation. And this week, I met these two lovely ladies that are putting up a show that opens next week, a week from tomorrow, Thursday, over at the Poller in Narrowsburg. And the name of the show is Time's Up. And I met two ladies, Melissa Bell and Lori Agusta. She's the director. Melissa wrote some of the music and the lyrics for the show. And in our conversation, we talk about the power of ensemble work and the joy of writing from real life and how humor can both entertain and provoke thought. And we also explore Melissa's songwriting, Lori's approach to directing. It's really a lot of fun. So I think the listeners are going to enjoy that conversation.
And Curtain Call is going to debut every Friday. So this episode won't drop till Friday, but here's a preview of your conversation.
There's no show quite like the one that will be blooming in the heart of Narrowsburg in just a couple weeks' time. It's theater with teeth, heart, and hometown flavor. Time's Up delivers laughter, surprise, and a whole cast of characters who hold up a funhouse mirror to the world we live in. It's ensemble-driven, fearless, and rooted in the joyful chaos of live theater. With music, satire, sketch, and story, the show dives into life's absurdities. So with us today, writer-composer Melissa Bell and director Lori Agusta of the show Time's Up. Melissa, I'm going to give the first question to you. I know you're the writer of Time's Up, but again, it was a collaborative experience, right?
Well, I'm mostly just writing the songs. Actually, okay. Lori wrote a lot. All of the participants wrote a lot of their sketches. Okay. So I would just say that mostly I'm just the writer of the music. And really, doing the music has been really fun. But the sketches were developed by the cast and the people who were in them and by Lori.
Lori, where did the idea then of the show come up? How did you come up with it?
So I guess comedy, improv in particular, is my religion. So I've been doing this for a long time in Connecticut, in San Francisco, in Austin. And when I moved here, we kind of created this group back in 2018 and started to put together Up and Coming at that time that we performed in 2019 at the Emerald Ballroom. Okay. And it was based on an article that came out that called Narrowsburg an up and coming small town. So we used that to build the show around. We had some funny sketches that you kind of, you know, will find a way to make it work within this framework. Mm-hmm. But it was all original and just a lot of fun, and people loved it. We sold out very quickly and had to bring it back in the fall. We started to write another show and not really sure what that was going to be. Some of the premises that we laughed at that we really liked that when we brought it back last year, this is now a couple years later, mm-hmm. we still laughed at. So that was a good indicator that we should stick with this.
Let's not walk away from that.
So we started with that and then wanted something fresh. And then the Time's Up just kind of evolved out of that. And I think this show has just really created what it wanted to be.
So, Melissa, when coming up with the music now for the show, mm-hmm. what was the process there?
Well, I listened to what they were doing and I tried to clue in. I came up with something and it wasn't quite right, which, you know, happens. And then I shifted it to make it a little more topical to the show. I listen to what the situations are. A lot of us were up here as weekend people. Yeah. And after COVID, a lot of us stayed. And it was sort of like time's up for the city. And now we're here. And sometimes that creates conflicts in our lives. And sometimes it creates funny situations. And so it was really sort of a breakup song. Our theme song is a little bit of a breakup song with New York City. Uh-huh. And sort of coming back to roots, part of the reason we've come back is we just need more space in our lives to explore, to be creative, and that sort of thing. And then it pokes a little fun at some of the situations that we're going to see.
I assume you wrote the music as well as the lyrics to the...
Most of the lyrics. Lori had this idea for an Amish boy band. And she wrote a whole bunch of, you know, ideas down. And so I just took a look at it and I listened around on, you know, for some sort of, I knew I wanted a particular sound and I kind of listened to some music and things and like what would sound best with this. And then I took out my guitar and just started playing some things and came back, presented it to the group. And now the guys have taken it over and are doing some amazing moves with this song. Right. I took these ideas and, you know, when you're making music, you want to make rhymes and you want to make fit with your rhythm and tell a little story. And
I will also say this whole show is a collaboration. We massage it. We play with it. And I love how Melissa will take something and be like, you know what? That's just not funny enough. It's just kind of, or that's predictable. And she doesn't get like upset about it. She's like, sure. All right, let me think about it. And comes back with something that will just floor me. And to me, that's why I do this. I want you to floor me. I want to laugh out loud.
Well, that's very much what collaboration is, right? Yeah. An ensemble piece is being able to be comfortable enough to allow for other people's ideas, even if they go against your initial idea or to change your idea. And to be flexible in that
respect.
Yeah,
absolutely. Right? I mean, I've always been in a creative field and I really learned that the best results come when you just listen. What I love about Lori's direction, she really listens and she gives everybody time to, she doesn't say time's up. Like that, even though the show says it.
But there is a moment when it is time's up.
Well, that's true.
And how about you do this?
Yes.
So, and I will say that with this group, this has been such a pleasure working together. Because, you know, I'm not for everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm blunt. I want you to be amazing. I want you to be the best you can be. And I really put my heart and soul into everything. And sometimes I may not take the time to say it so pretty. And for some people, that's not a comfortable place to be.
Sure.
But with this group, there is a trust and there is an understanding that it comes from love and I just want you to be great.
But I think you also give everybody enough time to really to present their ideas. And that's really important. You know, having your voice heard is a very important thing. And Lori definitely gives everybody the space or the voice to be heard. And then she'll either say, okay, this was funny. This is really where you want to be at. But some of this other stuff, clean it up.
Or cut it.
Or cut it. But you basically, it becomes the actors really become, they embody the characters. And really, Lori was there to build, I mean, the whole world. She had a vision for the whole world of the play. And a director really does bring all of that creation there. And then those characters, they would walk on stage and just, sometimes they just say things and you're like, wow, where did that come from? Because they're adding more and more layers. So the fun part about this show is, again, there's the scripted material that's been worked out. But boy, when they open their mouths and start to really, those characters start to come out, it's just so much fun to watch.
This show was pieces of a lot of different characters. So it, to me, it was an extremely different experience. And the hardest part to me was really building a show out of all these pieces.
Right.
And layering it together. And I refer to it as like the Lego show. So put this and put that there. We can move this and try to keep it, you know, be able to do that character in this location, that location, or that location. So we had some flexibility with it. But building a solid show that made sense was a challenge. But I think it really is amazing how it came together and keeps you engaged and just keeps adding to it.
I think with comedy, there's sort of what you call the button, which is sort of at the end of a scene. And finding that little, that button, putting a button on it, as some people have called it, is really important. And Lori tends to find that exact spot, where to freeze it and where to stop it and where that button is.
It's a rhythm. It's a dance.
Yes.
And you can feel it.
What would you think overall themes that you explored within the show?
So the show, the basic theme of the show is about living in a rural area. It's about the people that come to visit. It's about the people that come to stay. It's about the people that were born and raised. But it's about life in a rural community. We don't have a Starbucks. You know, when people are like, I'll just go out for coffee. It's like, yeah, okay, great. Right. See you in an hour.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. And then again, I have to go to the grocery store. I'll be back in an hour.
Yeah, right, right.
So you just saying that, telling me that, it makes me want to see the show. Right? Because there's so many things that I think automatically, oh, I'm going to relate to. And to be able to see ourselves in a show like this, and I can only imagine some of the things that you'll bring to it. And if you get, you say what you want to say. She's laughing here.
I'm laughing because we have a farmer's market that sells anything but produce. We have a lot of town hall meetings.
Gosh, that's funny.
Which are very funny. And I think, you know what? No matter what city you live in, town hall or city council meetings are funny.
Yes.
So to be part of a flourishing art community and just to be part of it and help create it has just been such a gift.
You've gotten these actors from the community, I assume.
They're all local. Okay. Yes. Yes. We have Tommy Cambridge, who lives right here in... He's in Narrowsburg.
He's between Calicoon and Narrowsburg. Mm-hmm. Professional actor.
Professional. Yes.
Susan Mendoza, professional actor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Jess Beveridge, who is a professional actress. She works with Farm Arts Collective in Damascus. Yep. Jess Beveridge is here. Now she lives in Milanville. And then we have Lexi McAtee. Mm-hmm. She's from Beach Lake. And then we have Hudson Williams and Enyon. Sorry,
I saw that. I was wondering how to pronounce it.
Yeah. It's just like it's like the town out towards Scranton.
Enyon. Okay. So Enyon? Let's say that again. Well,
Hudson, if you're listening, call in and tell us how to say your name. We just call him Hudson.
Hudson.
Yeah. He's a guy named for a valley and a river, right?
Oh, he's great. He's a great, funny local actor again. We have Matt Carpenter, who is... Everybody knows Matt Carpenter here.
Very talented actor.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
A man of many, many talents.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Chris Parsons, who is new to the area, but he is over working. You can also find him in the Narrowsburg wine store there. But he's also been a Shakespearean actor as well. Oh. Did a lot of work in New York City. And he's quite funny and talented and willing to wear all kinds of costumes, which is fun.
Let's talk about how people can see this show. Give me the dates. Give me the times.
Yes. Well, it is going to be at the end of the month. It's going to be April 24th, 25th. And 26. The doors will open at 7:30, so you can come in, get your best seat, get your drink, and then it's at the parlor, which is in the building that was just renovated with the old furniture store.
90 Main Street.
Can we get the skin? Is there a place we can go online, or do we just pay at the door?
You can do either. If you go online and buy them ahead of time, you can go to myrivertickets.com. That's myrivertickets.com. You can choose your night. Mm-hmm. And it's $25 ahead of time. If you come to the door, you're going to pay a $5 extra fee.
Well, I, for one, am very much looking forward to seeing the show. You can catch times up at the parlor. That's April 24th through May 3rd.
Tickets at
myrivertickets.com.
What a joy to spend time with the creative minds of Time's Up, a show that proves laughter when rooted in truth and community is one of the most powerful tools that we have. So my sincere thanks to Melissa Bell and to Lori A. Guzda. I want to thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
This was fun. Appreciate
it. I know,
it was
really fun.
It's been a pleasure, ladies. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to Tom Candela for that preview of Curtain Call. That's the new local podcast that is devoted to theater and the professional stage. We'll be debuting those episodes every Friday at our website, wjffradio.org. And if you're a member of the theater community and want to get in touch with Tom, you can email tom@wjffradio.org. We'll take a break. And when we come back, a classical masterpiece, Hiding in Plain Sight. We'll learn more after a break. This is Radio Chatskill.
On the next Radiolab, the story of a piece of plastic we don't think about very often.
The cassette changed everything.
The cassette tape.
Cassette tapes were absolutely central in the Iranian Revolution.
The impact on China was just utterly profound.
I mean, you can draw a clear line from the cassette to the internet.
No.
Absolutely.
Join us for the first episode in our four-part series, Mixtape.
This afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. Well, a forgotten composer is shining again in a weekend of chamber music concert revival at the Cooperage. Classical Kit is here along with Andrew Wagoner, the co-artistic director of Weekend of Chamber Music. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Andy. How are you doing?
Good morning, Kit. Good morning, Tim. I'm well. How are you?
We're good. A little bit chilly up here, but we'll get through it. you know, usually I'm seeing you in the summer, but nice that we're going to be seeing you this Friday at the Cooperage. And I have to say I appreciate that it's at 4 instead of at 8 so that we're not driving through this freezing weather so late.
Right.
So tell us about this composer, Amanda Meyer Röntgen. Röntgen. Yeah. Thank you. And the rest of the program that you're going to be presenting at the Cooperage this Friday.
Sure. Well, Amanda Meyer was a Swedish violinist and composer, late 19th century. And like so many women who performed and composed during that time, she was quite well known and extremely well respected among musicians. So her musical friends included Brahms and Schumann, among many others. But two things happened. She married the son of her composition teacher, Julius Röntgen, and upon entering into holy matrimony, it was decided that she should stop performing publicly because this was not a decorous thing for a wife to do. And so her career as a violinist kind of tanked, at least publicly. But she continued composing, and her music was played most often in private salons, so in living room concerts. And all of the great musicians of the day were aware of her and aware of her music, but her music didn't reach a wider public. And unfortunately, she died quite young of tuberculosis. And so she is part of a kind of hidden pantheon of women composers from this period who were now just really getting to know, for the simple reason that they were written out of the script when the history of Western music was written.
Well, and it'll be great to, you know, to acquaint people with her work. I confess I'm not familiar with her piano quartet or any of her music, and I've done like at least 4 or 5 shows of all women composers with no repeats. So I'm really excited about that. But she's not the only woman composer who is a woman who will be featured in this program, correct?
That is correct. We also have a much more recent piece by a woman who has been celebrated as a composer during her lifetime, just in part from the happy accident of having been born 100 years later. But that's Victoria Bond, who is both an excellent conductor and composer. And the group that we've brought to the States for this concert, the Danish group, the Rudersdal Chamber Players, they're performing a concert tonight at Symphony Space in New York, where they'll do Victoria's piece, and then we'll bring it up to the Cooperage on Friday.
Excellent, and I'm really looking forward to that because it was originally composed for a dance work by Lynn Taylor Corbett, who passed away in January, a great choreographer. And
I knew that you would make that connection.
Yeah, and you know, it's like there's so much music composed for dance that doesn't necessarily get heard outside of that. But of course, Victoria Bond has composed all sorts of things. Are you also, because I was a little confused between the two concerts, are you also doing a work by Frisova, the Four Seasons, or was that for the city?
That's on the Symphony Space concert.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Now yeah, you have a work.
Grab bag of programs.
Right. So your Matter Circle Heart, is that being premiered at the Symphony Space concert, or did they do that last week? Or
no, that's being premiered tonight, and I'm racing up there as we speak to rehearse and do that concert, and then that piece will also be done at the Cooperage. So in effect, the Cooperage performance is part of the premiere of the piece. It's part of the premiere week.
Right.
So that's a piece that I wrote for the Rudersdal group just this past summer. So I'm excited to hear that, needless to say.
Well, I'm looking forward to that, and it looks like a really great program. And I wanted to give some details so people can find it. I mean, they can pay at the door, but they could also get tickets online, I believe, through River Tickets, though it's
MyRiverTickets.com, exactly.
Okay. And so this is going to be at the Cooperage, which is 1030 Main Street in Honesdale this Friday. Doors open at 3:30 and the concert begins at 4. We have about two more minutes. Is there something more that you'd like to tell us about the group or about the music that's going to be played?
Well, sure. About the group, because they're typical of a kind of group that of which there are a lot in Europe, an excellent first-rate group made up of friends who freelance and teach, but also collaborate on chamber music. And because of just the arts infrastructure there, which is quite different than it is here, they're able to work both as freelancers and as a unified group at a very, very high level. And they're quite well known in Denmark and in Poland and in France. But not well known here, simply because it's quite difficult to come here. I don't know if you remember, but we were going to bring them 2 years ago, and they couldn't get their visas to come, and so we had to postpone the whole thing until this year. But now they're here, and they're just absolutely fantastic. And their whole approach to programming is somewhat different than one would expect from a group here. And they're very committed to doing a mix of old music, new Scandinavian music, new American music, and then music like the Meyer Röntgen Piano Quartet. And with that combination, they put together a program that really is unique. And that if you're not at the Cooperage on Friday, you just won't hear it anywhere else. Even at Weekend of Chamber Music, where we have all the same values, we are not plugged into the European sources for things like the Amanda Meyer that right. they are. That's why none of us had ever heard of her. But they found the piece, and they are bringing it back to life.
Well, and I'm just thrilled that you were able to facilitate that. And I also have to say, we're really looking forward to the great tradition, Weekend of Chamber Music from July 14th to 26th. Your composer in residence is someone that I'm thrilled to get to see. And, you know, it's going to be a wonderful summer ahead. And I'll see you on Friday.
Excellent. I look forward to it. Yeah, and can't wait to see you this summer, too.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Safe travels, Andrew. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim. All right, take care.
And there's more information about the Amanda Meyer concert that's at the Cooperage on Friday at thecooperageproject.org or Weekend of Chamber Music's website, wcmconcerts.org. Also, more information about their summer program, which has already been announced, as Kit mentioned, The Great Tradition, and Augusta Reed Thomas, the composer in residence.
Yeah, she's amazing. I think I've played one of her bassoon concertos and something that was transposed for marimba. She, just the page of her recording, you wind up scrolling forever because she's just so prolific and so well represented in recordings as well. So,
Classical Kit, thank you so much for bringing us the classical music in the region. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Well, that'll do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I mentioned our new local podcast, Curtain Call. You can find that at our website, wjffradio.org. Go to the tab at the top there and find the drop-down menu under programs, and you'll find podcasts there, as well as all of our local shows at wjffradio.org. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
This is Ira Glass. On This American Life, we bring you deeply reported stories about some of the most important issues facing our country. But that's not all.
Guess what? I'm waiting for my bus.
For instance, a five-year-old who gets to ride the school bus for the very first time.
Oh, man.
That's my bus! It's
personal stories of the biggest and smallest kinds every week.
This American Life, Saturday night at 6 on Radio Catskill.
I'm Jeff. Join me Saturday at midnight for Electric Mountain. 2 hours of house, techno, indie dance, and more, plus sets by top local, New York City, and global guest DJs. From the underground to the highest peak, it's Electric Mountain, Saturday at midnight on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at wjffradio.org. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's forecast much cooler than yesterday, a high of 42 expected, with winds gusting up to 40 miles an hour. Overcast skies continuing to stay overcast overnight, a low of 33. Sunshine tomorrow, though, and a high near 55. On Point is next from WBUR Boston. It's 11 o'clock.
WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.